Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
What is going on, Charlotte Hornets fans? It is I, Darian Thomas, your host of the Trust the Buzz podcast, a part of the Believe Podcast Network. Today's show, as always, is brought to you by Bet Online. Use code Believe for a 50% welcome bonus. We got an action-packed show for you today as I'm recording this on Tuesday, November 21st. It is the day after the Charlotte Hornets beat the Boston Celtics in overtime. I don't quite remember the score. I should have probably pulled that up, but it was a nail biter. So we're going to talk about some things from that game. Also, we're just going to talk about some things going forward, because once Terry gets back, we have the team. Everybody that we said we wanted, everybody where we're saying wait till blah 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 gets back, we will officially have everyone as far as the key main guys. We may still be probably missing Nick Richards for a little bit. Frank Ntilikina still won't be playing, and Cody Martin. So technically, is it everyone? No, but as far as what we've been looking to see really for the last 2 years, we will have it. So I'm looking forward to when that time comes. Terry is out for the game tomorrow against the Wizards. Well, actually today, that's probably when y'all will be listening to this. This will come out Wednesday morning. And so as we look forward to that game and then just a little bit for the rest of the season, at least as far as the eye can see, we'll also talk about some things about the LaMelo Ball narrative. Because if you know me at all, whether you know me from the channel, Trust the Buzz on YouTube, or if you just know, just listen to this podcast and have listened to, you know, maybe a couple of episodes once I started to take over after we've had some great hosts in the past. Essentially, I don't really like to talk too much about LaMelo Ball. And that is because so many people are going to do it, as far as the people who follow the family, as far as the people who just follow him personally. They're going to let you know when LaMelo has a good game. So I really just tried to give the Charlotte Hornets fan perspective, because I've always been a Charlotte Hornets fan. So that is why you don't really hear me like go on and on and on about LaMelo. Think he's a fantastic player. Obviously, you know, they did the right thing by re-signing him. He is the franchise. He is the offense at times. And last night against the Celtics was one of those times. But in general, like I said, I think so many people are going to cover it. But I think it's important to get the actual fan perspective, as you're a fan of the Charlotte Hornets. And what is your perspective? And I want to talk about that narrative, because I've seen some nasty narratives about my guy LaMelo Ball. And he's just proving everybody wrong. I've even came on here and I've always said that talent, I'm not worried about. It was the shot he would take. And he still takes bad shots, but he finally makes them. That was my only thing. If you're not making them, let's maybe do something else to kind of work your way back. Let's wait till you get healthy. He's healthy now and been balling out. So like I said, action-packed show for you. And we're going to start off by talking about the game last night against the Boston Celtics. So what a game, what a game, what a game. It started off kind of, you know, a typical Hornets game where they actually kind of stick, you know, with the other team for a little bit, even though this team is one of the best teams in basketball, if not the best team in basketball. The Charlotte Hornets did a good job of kind of keeping pace with the Boston Celtics in the first quarter. I think the Celtics only ended up scoring like 21 points, 23 points in that first quarter, which is that is good for us. We typically are not able to hold teams to that low. In the first quarter, normally teams are scoring like 30. So our defense actually played pretty well, in my opinion, in that first quarter. Nothing extraordinary defensively at this time. You know, we had Miles Bridges. I think he was on Jason Tatum. We had Brandon Miller. I believe he was on Drew Holiday. Gordon Hayward, I think, was on. Who was Gordon Hayward on? Jaylen Brown. And then they would have LaMelo on whoever was left, and then, of course, Mark on Porzingis. That's kind of how they had it defensively, and I think it worked out great. Like I said, it was standard basketball. Nothing really stuck out. LaMelo came out hot. That's, you know, he came out very, very energetic. And I said something like, I think this is the most energetic we've seen. Somebody was like, he's been doing this. And I was like, no, the energy just felt different. He was zooming on both sides of the ball. So that's kind of really what I meant by like he just seems more energetic. He was going full speed both ways. And I really appreciate that from because once again, as we can kind of tell, you know, once we get to the end of talking about this game, they saw that video of Jason Tatum talking about, you know, getting up for a game in Charlotte. And what's funny about that is that he really didn't say anything wrong as far as, you know, he didn't say the Charlotte Hornets suck or anything like that. He was just saying, you know, you're playing a team on a Monday night. It's not a team that, you know, is a playoff team. He just so happened he's the Charlotte Hornets. And he's like, hey, you got to get up and play for those games. And he came out to play. He ended up with 45 points. So he definitely came to play. And I think he was definitely ready to prepare to back up his words. I love that for him. Even though he's a Duke former Duke Blue Devil and actually in Boston. I don't like any team from Boston. You know, I got to pay respect where it's due. And he showed up to play. He know what he said. And he you know, was trying to show that, hey, look, I know what I said. So therefore, I'm going to have to play excellent ball. And I think he did just that. They couldn't stop him. It was between fadeaways, threes. They just really couldn't stop him. And that really started in the second quarter where him and Peyton Pritchard were just going crazy. Now, Jason Tatum had some shots in the first quarter, of course. You know, he's going to score. But in the second quarter, him and Peyton Pritchard just really couldn't miss. And I think at one point in that second quarter, we saw the Boston Celtics, I think, make six straight threes. For some reason, we could just not stop. And Peyton Pritchard really was like the culprit. He just could not miss. I don't know what it was, but he could not miss. The Hornets, as you know, don't really do a good job of guarding the three-point line. And part of that is because we close out way too fast. What happens a lot and what I'm kind of seeing defensively is like the Hornets will ball watch. And then someone would get it in the paint, and then they'll see the open person in the corner, and they'll kick it out. Whoever is guarding that person on the three-point line is usually sucked in all the way, basically guarding ball at this point. They have to go so far back out to the corner to try to, you know, contest the shot. And then depending on who it is, they get out there. Mark Williams, I think, does a pretty good job of it. LaMelo Ball, of course, Brandon Miller, they all do a pretty decent job of if that happens, they're able to kind of get back out there. Then you close it out too hard. And then kind of that person who, you know, was about to shoot, let's just say Drew Holiday for this instance, is able to now attack the rim and there's really no help because you're out to play at this point. So they either whoever's guarding inside will either have to rotate over to the ball handler where the ball handler can easily just dump it off, or they're going to try not to play in the middle, which, you know, that it's just a 2-on-1 at that point. So that is part of the reason why we're not able to guard at 3-point line. I think another part of it is that we're just not really good at denying people the ball. We kind of just let them get the ball and kind of figure out what they want to do with it. And saying that, going into the second half, really, this is where, I mean, LaMelo's been making shots all game, but the second half, I think, really is where he makes his mark as far as just every basket just felt like a clutch basket. So I think in the first half, what we were seeing was LaMelo was hitting, but it was more of like, this is just an amazing game. Like he's having a great game. In the second half, we just needed every single bucket possible, and he was doing that. So it was great to see that from him. Just because of the fact that I know, as we'll talk about later, the narrative about LaMelo is that he doesn't play winning basketball. But, man, he was playing his butt off at the end of this game. And we needed literally every single point, every single drive, every single assist, everything he did, we needed it. So, shouts out to LaMelo on that. And, of course, you know, we'll follow up as we continue to go through the game. But really, no one else was hitting from the three-point line. I think Brandon Miller hit a clutch three, you know, somewhere towards, like, the end of the game. PJ Washington was 3-for-9. I do know that off the top of my head because from seeing the box score earlier. And, I mean, that's okay. It's, what, 33%? I guess I'll take it, even though we'll need PJ to kind of be closer to a 38, maybe even 40% three-point shooter. But I'll take 33% considering no one else was hitting, because until, like, really the end of the game where Miles Bridges hits the game winner, spoiler alert, there really wasn't much three-point shooting going on from anybody else. So, shouts out to kind of PJ for just, you know, leaving, you know, some of that pressure off LaMelo a little bit just from the outside. Because, like I said, outside of LaMelo, no one else was really hitting. But Anyway, we basically started to fight back in that third quarter. In that third quarter, we really started to fight back and trying to get close into the game. There was a part in the game where we were really close. I want to say we got down to like four, but then the offense went cold. And the reason it was so frustrating with the offense going cold is because during these minutes, that's when none of the starters, if I'm not mistaken, for the Boston Celtics were playing at this point. So we were just kind of there. And there was, it just didn't make sense how we couldn't at least tie that game with those guys in the game. And I think part of it is that our bench unit right now is just so suspect, because even though I'm probably about to praise Gordon Hayward in 5 minutes, it wasn't until late into the game where he really started to make a difference offensively, defensively, the whole second half. As we'll talk about later, he did a pretty good job of kind of getting us to where we need to be. But overall, it was just, we couldn't hit. Bryce McGowan's was, they were literally leaving Bryce McGowan's wide open. He just could not hit a three. LaMelo really wasn't in. Ish Smith was kind of hitting his shots, but you know, like, Ish Smith is not really looking to score, and also as a team we shouldn't be really relying on Ish Smith to score, but he was getting a couple buckets here and there, but really he's there to facilitate and he does an excellent job, but we are just not hitting. Also, you got to think of the part that we do not have Mark Williams. We do not have Nick Richards, so Mark Williams is our only big, and we did play a couple of small ball lineups, and this is one of them when we could not score at all. I like the small ball lineup because defensively, I believe they did their thing. It was just that we could not score. And considering, you know, we had different variations of a small ball lineup. We had one where it was like LaMelo, Ish Smith, Bryce McGowan's, Miles, PJ. Then there was another one where it was like Ish Smith, Bryce McGowan's, Gordon, Brandon Miller, Gordon Hayward, and my, like, we just had different variations of small ball, but we could not capitalize on any of them. And part of that, I think, is because Miles Bridges did not have a good game statistically. Well, I guess he ended up with a double-double, but basically, if you watch the game, I got a lot more from watching how he played outside of just, you know, if you were to just not watch the game and look at the box score. Looking at how he actually played, I think that he was able to provide a lot for us because he was doing a lot of the small things. Even though he wasn't scoring, he was sensational at rebounding. I think he played pretty good defense. He was kind of just all over the place. He was another ball handler, kind of take the ball up the court, push the pace, because I do feel like we have guys who are able to kind of alleviate some pressure off LaMelo when it comes to taking the ball up court and, you know, kind of letting LaMelo rest as we get the ball through, you know, across half court. But LaMelo is one of the guys who we really can rely on to get the rebound and push the tempo. So he did that a few times, and he just had some excellent passes. One thing that's forgot a lot about Miles Bridges is how good of a passer he is. I think he's an excellent passer. But another person I want to talk about, like, once we, as we're continuing talking about the end, you know, second half of this game, is Gordon Hayward, because Jason Tatum, with a mixture of PJ, Brandon Miller, and Miles Bridges guarding him, had 31 points in that first half, and it just seemed like he was just going to drop 60, maybe even 70, and just make a fool of us. Now, he still had 45, still made a fool of us, but in that second half, and that's something I was trying to get people to understand on Twitter, was that they were like, he's still scoring 45, and if he made a free throw, you know, we wouldn't be having this conversation. Yes. I'm not saying that won't be true. That still doesn't change the fact that I think Gordon Hayward did an excellent job on Jason Tatum in that second half. So there was a period of time where Jason Tatum didn't play, as we just mentioned. But from the second half through OT, you know, through the end of the game, Jason Tatum only had 15 points or 14 points. I'm not mad at that. If you're telling me Jason Tatum, who one is one of the best players in the league, two can probably easily average 30. I'm not mad at him, you know, going from 31 to 14, because Gordon Hayward, I don't think he really even locked Jason Tatum up. He just really made it difficult for Jason Tatum to even get in the rhythm of even getting the ball. He was hedging pretty well, so Jason Tatum really wasn't able to get around screens. At this point, Jaylen Brown is kind of out of the game. He has 5 fouls, not really hitting. It's really the Jason Tatum show. If the Celtics want to win this game, they need to rely on Jason Tatum, because also Kristaps Porzingis wasn't doing too much, because I think Mark Williams did an excellent, excellent job of guarding Kristaps, between rebounding, boxing out, able to close out on the three-point line, kind of keeping up. Mark Williams did an excellent job. So it really was down to, if the Celtics want to win this game, they have to go through Tatum. Because Pritchard wasn't hitting anymore either. We did a good job of kind of doing some of the similar things of hedging, denying the ball, making it really difficult for him on a perimeter. To where even if he got the ball, he kind of had to give it up immediately. Because we also did a few blitzes, which I typically don't like for us, because usually it ends up in a breakdown. But I think tonight is probably the best we've ever ran at defense. So just once again, shout outs to Gordon Hayward, because I think he was the hub of that. I'm not saying that he's the Tatum stopper. All I am saying is that he just made it difficult. And then you throw in kind of what we were throwing at Boston. We just made it difficult for him. And it turned out that we end up winning this game. And LaMelo had some clutch plays at the end, especially. I know he pushed off, but if you look at it, LaMelo Ball had like 30-something points with one free throw, when I can almost guarantee you that if I go back and look at his drives to the basket, at least a third, if not half, he was getting fouled on and not caught. Even though he may have pushed at the end in regulation, even when he went to go to the game tying layup, he was fouled then. Jrue Holiday hit his hip as the LaMelo Ball's going up. It should have been the and one, but obviously they didn't call it. So we move. We keep playing. Speaking of Jrue Holiday, man, LaMelo did this one move where he crossed up Jrue Holiday so bad, and he kind of pushed off a little bit. If you can hide it, then it is what it is. But Jrue Holiday went flying, and the screenshot of it is hilarious because it makes it look worse than really what it was. But it is what it is. It's crazy to see, because like I've said maybe before, I don't know if I've said that on here, but Jrue Holiday is one of my favorite players like in the league. So it has been like for a good while. So it's good to see him kind of like be on a team that where I really think he can make a difference after being traded. But still, that was crazy to see him fly like that. LaMelo really was on one. There really wasn't much you could do to stop him. I think he was doing a good job of like breaking doubles. He did a good job of kind of finding the open man. He was getting assists. Getting rebounds, getting the long rebounds. If the ball got, you know, took a long rebound and was kind of past where Mark Williams or Miles Bridges could get it, LaMelo usually for the most part got it. So his rebound, we had to rebound out of team, because that's what Boston does, and they're one of the best rebounding teams in the league. And consider none of their bigs are real true rebounders. It was imperative, even though Al Horford was out, it was imperative that we gain a rebound, and we did just that, because that's what the Celtics are going to do. I don't actually know the rebound discrepancy. I don't know if we had more rebounds than they did or not, but I know we kept up with them. I know that much. It was a close rebound battle, but the Hornets continued to kind of battle with the Celtics, and that's all we needed. Like that's all I've been asking for. I'm pretty sure that's all you've been asking for as another fellow Hornets fan, is that we just get a team to compete. And I think that the Hornets did that last night, and that's what ultimately ended up us winning the game. Like I said, I know Jason Tatum missed those shots, but Gordon Hayward caught Jason Tatum sleeping on the baseline a couple of times, which led us, one of those was like late in the fourth, and that's what kind of got us to where we were, to where LaMelo was able to tie the game. It was just a lot. It was a lot that it was a lot of little things to take to win this game, and that's something that I feel like we have not showed all season. As great as LaMelo played, no one else statistically, scoring wise, really played that outstanding. If you look at it, I mean, Mark Williams did Mark Williams things, but we know that like a majority of his help is on the defensive end, and offensively, he's able to get buckets so easy that it works. Of course, it helps him dropping 18, 20 kind of easily at times, but it really just, there was no one really doing anything. It wasn't like anyone else had like a consistent hot hand. Mark was getting his buckets, but it was all like over the course of the game. No one really had a hot hand to the end, but until that point, everybody was just doing the small things that they could in order to keep us, you know, in the game. And if I had to say so myself, I would say LaMelo did the best he could of keeping us in the game all, three and a half, four quarters, basically four quarters plus overtime, like the whole game. He did whatever he could to keep us in the game. He had clutch shots. But I would go as far to say as the team finished it. Like, as much as LaMelo Ball had an impact on the end of that game, regulation and overtime, I would say that he, most of his damage just came in like the between time, you know, until we got to those clutch moments. And that's when the team kind of showed. Mark Williams had a good block on Peyton Pritchard. Gordon Hayward, like I said, cut baseline. He hit a couple of shots at the end. Brandon Miller hit a corner three. Miles, of course, hit the go-ahead. So there was just a lot of things that I felt like the Hornets did to kind of close out the game as a team. And LaMelo Ball, we wouldn't be able to do it without LaMelo Ball, because while everybody else was struggling basically the whole game, LaMelo Ball was balling. No pun intended, and kept us in that whole game. So then everybody else, I wouldn't dare to say they started hitting or they started performing well, but they just started doing enough to kind of get us over the hump, because Melo was probably gassed by the time we got to the end of that game. So once again, it's not to take away from Melo. I'm not saying he didn't have clutch plays. He had plenty of clutch plays in that game last night, but I really feel like he kept us in the game. Without him, it wouldn't even be close. And then I felt like the guys kind of did what they needed to do to finish. And that might be the recipe. I'm not saying play like crap and then, you know, expect LaMelo to save you every game, but I am saying LaMelo is playing out of his mind right now. So if he can keep us in game single-handedly, because I've said this before, LaMelo Ball is our offense. Like, he is the offense. He's that good. I know James Harden went on to say, like, he's a system, like, that he is a system. I wouldn't necessarily say LaMelo Ball is a system yet, but he's literally like the step under it, which is he's our entire offense. And that's essentially what a system is referring to. But I just feel as though you could run an offense through LaMelo, but there's still some things with his game to where it prevents him from kind of necessarily being a system. Also, actually, now that I'm thinking about it, a really big part of that would be the fact that we don't really have complimentary players around him either, because he's a guy who, especially now, can drive and kick, well, probably some of the best in the league. We don't have any shooters. So it's really hard for him to really operate as a system, but I will say he's our offense. To me, there's a difference. I will 1,000% understand if you were to say that there is no difference. That's stupid. I think there's a difference. Not a big difference, but I think there's a difference. I think we surround him with some better talent that can more fit his game. I think his game will go to the next level, and then we can really start talking about LaMelo Ball being a system, because he's not far off at all. But yeah, great win. Great, great team win. I'm happy with everything I saw. Mark, like I said, Mark Williams did a good job, especially considering we've been getting killed on the five out, and the Celtics, that's essentially what they can. They can run either or. I mean, but Porzingis is good in the paint, but is also, you know, he can shoot. Same with Al Horford, even though he didn't play. Mark Williams did an excellent job of just playing Porzingis wherever Porzingis wanted to be. If he wanted to be on the three, Mark was out there guarding him. If he wanted to be inside, Mark was right there guarding him. So I think he just did an excellent job and don't want that to go unnoticed. But if anything, I think we need a bench. We need a bench bad. And that kind of goes into my point about, you know, getting where do I see this team going? As far as, like, you know, nearsighted, I would say for the Wizards, we got to win that game. If you're the Hornets, and want to make the playoffs, and I've said this before, you have to beat the teams that on paper, you know, that you're expected to beat, but then also you got to beat some of the teams that you're not expected to beat a couple of times. It has to be only a handful of times, but if you beat the teams that are kind of in your tier and below, and then every now and then, every blue moon, you beat a team that's better than you, playoffs, easily. And then when you look at our tier that I believe we can be in, not that we're in right now, not to where we're playing, but where we can be in, we have a chance to make the playoffs. One, it helps that tier is huge. That tier, like that middle tier, is huge. You got like Pacers, Raptors, Magic, Falcons, Hawks. Who else? I can't think of anybody else right now off the top of my head. Cavaliers are kind of playing down to that tier, but that's not the tier I would put them in. Just those teams like that, and that's just the East. I mean, because we still – some of these West games matter too. We have a chance. If this team continues to play any variation of what they played against the Celtics, we have a chance, but we need a better bench. Because like I said, when the Celtics took their starters out, we essentially didn't really have our starters in. You know, every now and then Steve would sub in LaMelo and for like a minute or two and whatnot. We just couldn't score. We couldn't do anything. And it was frustrating because they couldn't either. They weren't really hitting. They had some open shots, but they just weren't hitting them. But we couldn't hit either. And we didn't have open shots. Their bench unit is just better than ours. So we need just kind of like I keep asking for a 3-and-D guard because I'm tired of seeing Brandon Miller guard smaller guards. And not a detriment to Brandon Miller. I'm saying that, like, that's just not fair. Why is he guarding Jalen Brunson and guys like that when they're obviously just more shifting? He's a rookie. Like, I think it's going to just take time for him to be able to understand how to play these guys. It takes you playing them one or two times, maybe even three times, to kind of get a feel. And then, of course, you know, people are continuously evolving their game as well. So it's just not an easy transition. And I just don't understand why we continue putting him on smaller guards where they can kind of get by him, because people keep screaming he's a two and he's just not a two. He's not a two, not yet. And there's nothing wrong with that. So until then, we need kind of smaller guards that can guard. And as much as I like Terry Rozier, and I think he truly is kind of buying in to the defense, It still needs work. It still needs work. And we still need someone to kind of fill that role. So I think we can get that role. Cody Martin is supposed to be that. Cody Martin helping, I think, helps a lot on defense. Because that we need a guy to be like, I'll get my fast break dunks. I'll hit my corner three sometimes. But most of my energy is on defense. We need someone like that. Frank Ntilikina can kind of be that too. He wasn't that bad in preseason defensively. At least his offense was horrible. Frank Ntilikina falls into the territory of my offense stinks so bad. And this, maybe we can say the same thing about JT Thor. My offense stinks so bad that it doesn't make my defense worth it. I'm not this second team all defensive player. And then my offense just stinks. I'm a, you know, pretty solid. Like, people would want me on their team to play defense, but my offense is so bad. They're like, you know what? I'll take the guy with a little less defense, but can shoot. So we just had to stay cognizant of that. But going forward, if this team plays any variation of what we saw last night in Boston, I think we can be a good team. It's not going to be easy because 3-9 or 4-9 as a whole, we're five games under 500. We could, going on a five-game win streak is insane. And even if we do, like I said, we will be at 500. So it's just not going to be easy. We're playing a lot of West Coast teams coming up. We're going, you know, or a few couple of road trips as we finish this homestand. So it's just not a lot of easy stuff going. So the team's going to have to step it up. I know Miles Bridges said kind of in his little interview after the game that this is a game to kind of maybe flip it around for the team. And I hope so, because once again, you got to beat the teams you're supposed to beat. You got to beat the teams in your kind of tier. And, you know, we'll worry about the other teams later. But it is not going to be easy going forward. We're still dealing with injury. I have no idea when Terry Rozier is coming back. But we need to figure out what we are. Because the thing is, if the Hornets want to make the playoffs, I think a move needs to be made. I think a move needs to be made regardless. Because you get some assets for some guys that you don't kind of see in your future, things like that. But if you are trying to make the playoffs, I think some moves need to be made, because the answer to our problems is not on the roster. And if it is, it's all hypothetical. So what I mean by that is the Cody Martins, Frank Ntilikinas, even PJ is, like, I keep saying, like, I think I'm in love with the idea of what PJ is supposed to provide, but not actually what PJ does. And he's a good player. He's a good player. I think for this team, I think he needs to be a certain way, and that's just not his game as of right now. And so he is probably the epitome of, we see him go to a different team and they ask him to do different things, he probably would look even better. But for what we exactly need him for, consider everything else we kind of have, because PJ more so fits like a Miles, not that they play the same, but like kind of he wants to really score more and maybe be an okay defender. But we have Miles already, and that's kind of what Miles is. And I think Miles is better than an okay defender, but PJ can't put the ball on a full like Miles. It's just, and they kind of play the same position, because PJ is more of a 4-3 than a than a 4 or 5. You know what I mean? And really, if anything, he's like John Collins, where he's just like, you're just a 4. So Miles Bridges at least can play 3-4 and then maybe even small ball 5, depending on, you know, the lineups. But we have that. So I think if we want to win, we need to get rid of him. Maybe Gordon Hayward. Like, it's just some things that need to be looked at, because, like I said, Cody Martin, we don't know when he's coming back. And if he does, I'm not relying on him to be good. Same with Frank Ntilikina. I'm not relying on him to be good to help us. No, I think we need guys that we've seen play this year who have been playing well. That's what we'll need going forward. But now we're about to move into the final segment. I should probably get some like music. I will work on that for you guys. But now we're going to work into the final segment about the LaMelo Ball conversations. And simply put, I just don't understand the narrative around he doesn't make winning plays or he doesn't play winning basketball. I've seen Hornets fans say it. I've seen public outlets say it. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I do think more so you have to understand the circumstances. I think you also have to look at what he's doing and how effective it is. So we're going to break this section down into two smaller sections. So when people say LaMelo Ball doesn't play winning basketball, the two main components of that is, one, the flashiness and just kind of some of the absurd things he does. That's what they see, and they're like, oh, you can't. And then they see the Hornets suck and be like, oh, you can't win like that. And they're somewhat right. And then the other one is the reason he does those flashy, sometimes egregious things. So him doing it is one thing to deter people and say he doesn't play winning basketball. But then they're not understanding the reason in which why he does it, because that also plays a part into why you would think he doesn't play winning basketball. I'm about to explain it, but I don't know if that makes that much sense. So let's start off with the flashiness. So the behind the back to pass to Mark Williams last night. And sensational. Amazing. However, if the Hornets lost that game, someone would be like, oh, this is a flashy play, but it didn't win the game. So it's things like that. And then also the deep threes he takes a lot of like bad, quote unquote, bad threes, which, you know, by definition, they're bad shots, but he makes them. That's the type of player he is. He makes them more times than not. It all makes sense. But you see that and you see him miss, or if you don't really watch his game, you don't understand that's like his corner three. Like, he makes that so much that might be like his elbow three, kind of, you know what I mean? So I just, above the break when he takes those shots, I'm not really too concerned about it. But I do understand how people could see that and be like, oh, he took that with, you know, still 20 seconds left in the shot clock. And so there's no way that's winning basketball. And then once again, you correlate that to the Hornets just having been successful. And then another reason people say LaMelo Ball doesn't play winning basketball is sometimes it's the teammates' fault. So the reason he has to do those egregious things, the reason he has to play that certain way, maybe not the flashy passes, but a reason why he has to take some tough shots and ultimately make tough shots is because no one else is hitting around him. And people don't see that. They don't understand that. And some of them say, well, he's the point guard, so they, you know, he's not giving them the ball, whatever the case may be. And they think it's LaMelo's affecting these people from being good instead of these people not being good is affecting LaMelo. And that part I just don't get. Because, and I posted this on Twitter the other day, that the selfish shot that LaMelo takes, that I'm assuming people are referring to the most, is the above the break three. So if you're not familiar exactly with what the break is, you know, on the basketball court, you have the two lines on both sides of like the 3-point line. That's the break. So anything from, you know, that point basically to half court is above the break. And LaMelo takes a lot. Last I checked, he takes like 80. He's taken 80, but he was like 35% or 36%, maybe even 37% from above the break. That's a high, high percentage, especially considering we know some of the above the break threes aren't like at the break. They're basically half court and he's making them. So you take that in consideration to the corner three, where it's supposed to be the easiest three-point shot in basketball, in both corners, we'll put it together. At the time when I looked at the stat and posted this stat, as the four key guys outside of LaMelo Ball that's not named Miles Bridges. So it was PJ, Gordon Hayward, Terry Rozier, who missed a lot of games, but still, and Brandon Miller, they were like 25% from the corner. So if you're LaMelo, and I'm not saying he's sitting there analyzing the stats, but just by the feel of the game, the flow of the game, if you know they're not hitting, but you are, you have to continue to take that shot. You just have to continue. Now, I completely understand if, let's say, they were hitting a corner three at like a 40% clip. Then, yeah, okay. They're hitting that at a higher, but even, okay, let's say even the same. So let's say it was, I think it was 30, LaMelo's hitting like 36% from above the break. So let's say they're hitting 36%, you know, percent from the three or from the corner. Then, okay, even then, it's like, yes, the same percentage, but I would, you know, the corner is the easiest shot. But if you're hitting like that at a 10% difference better, you got to continue to take the shot. I don't care what anybody says and says it doesn't look like winning basketball. No one else is hitting. So if someone's going to hit, it has to be him. It has to be him. So that's why, like I said, we had to break it down into two separate kind of containers, is because you see the stuff he does sometimes and then you compare it to the Hornets record. And it's like, no way that is equating to winning, because they're not winning. But yeah, I see all these flashy plays from LaMelo. But then you say, you know, it's not winning basketball because these other guys aren't playing so well. So then he has to do, or it doesn't work both ways. So if these guys are continuing to play like trash, he has to kind of, you know, up it a little bit in order to try to get the team a chance to win. But no one sees that. No one understands that. And I'm not saying it has to be that way forever. I'm not saying that Gordon Hayward, because even though I just gave him praise, he didn't play well offensively all game last game. I'm not saying that, you know, he can't turn it around, but until they do, this is what we're kind of stuck to. We're kind of stuck to LaMelo continue taking these shots that he's making at a pretty high rate, if you ask me. It is just what it is. I need the other guys to step up. So that's why I just don't believe that the whole LaMelo Ball doesn't play winning basketball, because literally the stuff you see him do is a product of some of the stuff of the teammates not helping him. And some people look at the teammates not helping him as part of his fault because of how he plays, and not necessarily how he plays is a understanding of how he plays is more so because the team isn't really doing a lot of things they need to be doing. And I'll also say this. In LaMelo Ball's second year, Miles Bridges was damn near an all-star. I think he was really, really close. If the Hornets were a little better, he probably would have made the all-star team. They won 43 games that year. That was a winning year. That was LaMelo Ball's second year on the team, first year as a starter at full time. Because even in his rookie year, he didn't start a good chunk of games. And he got injured, right? He got injured his rookie year. So then he comes into the second year, plays even better, has the first time since, you know, in the 4 years, he's had someone that is even close to being an all-star, because he wasn't an all-star, but he was close. They win 43 games. Did they fizzle out at the end? Yeah. Did LaMelo not have the best game during that time? Yeah. I remember specifically he was taking some crazy shots in that game. I was like, oh my God, here we go again. Because, you know, the year before we lost. But didn't everybody play like crap for real? I think, I can always forget, but it was either the Hawks game or the Pacers game where PJ played really well, but everybody else played like crap. Either way, at winning basketball, to me, you had Mason Plumlee as your center and an injured Gordon Hayward most of the time. Because in both of those seasons, in our rookie season, in LaMelo Ball's rookie season, and in LaMelo's second season, the Hornets through like 25 games, 30 games was like a 4 seed. both times. And then right on the money, Gordon Hayward gets hurt, and then everything falls from that. And then I think in that second year, COVID was a thing, which the fact that we won 43 games that year is actually crazy because so much of the lineup was out through the COVID. Kelly Oubre, you know, hopefully he gets, you know, with his current injury, hopefully all that gets figured out. And I hope, you know, for a good, quick recovery, an easy recovery. But Kelly Oubre was like immune. He was like the only person healthy because I think LaMelo Ball like had some issues and some people had COVID. Kelly Oubre didn't have any injuries and he was like immune to COVID. And he was balling. Like, he was going crazy in those games to kind of, you know, bridge the gap between our guys being out and everybody slowly coming back. And then we kind of make a run to, you know, be the 10th seed again, even though we were 43 and 39. But the fact that you're saying LaMelo, some people say LaMelo Ball doesn't play winning basketball is insane to me. I get it as far as like a visual. If you just look and then look at a Hornets record, it's like, no, that's not winning basketball. But you watch the game and understand kind of why he does a couple of the things that he does and that he's efficient at it. I'm willing to take it until something gets turned around, which I have hope that it does. I have hope that it does. Gordon Hayward is a good basketball player. He makes me upset half the time, but he's a good basketball player. Brandon Miller is a rookie. Miles Bridges is coming back after not playing 200-something game, after not playing for 500-something days. PJ Washington, like I said, the idea, I still see it with PJ, but I just don't, I'm ready to win, and I'm not ready to like kind of figure that out. I think it's something PJ has to figure out, and I think you could say that about a lot of players on our team, is that some of the stuff of why they're not kind of reaching their potential, it's like, dude, you just have to want to reach it, instead of like, you want to play this way, and actually that's a good point, is are the Hornets asking them to play this way, or is that how they actually play? But at some point, it's like, dude, this is kind of where I see your skill set at, but you're playing it like a wholly, as if you're a wholly, completely different player. So I don't know. But anyway, we've talked long enough. This is a long, long episode. Didn't expect the episode to be this long, but thank you so much for listening. We talked about the Boston Celtics game. That was exciting. We talked about the kind of our team going forward and how I feel like we need a 3-and-D wing. We need a bench to kind of be a little better. We have a lot of little pieces here and there, but if we can consolidate some of that and get a solid role player on our bench, I think that would help. Also, something I didn't mention is I think we need another backup big, but someone that can maybe shoot, because of the fact that Mark Williams and Nick Richards, while their games are different and obviously different, they kind of do the same things. You kind of have them there for the same things. So I feel like if we do get a third tertiary center, it needs to be someone that can do something kind of completely off the radar, which in this case would be shooting. So that's something that we talked about as well, as just as far as what kind of we need if going forward. If we want to win, there's some things we need to do as far as the roster, as far as like, mentality, as far as X's and O's. We talked about that. And then last, we talked about the LaMelo Ball narrative that he doesn't play winning basketball, which is ridiculous to me. But thank you so much for listening, and I'll talk to you guys next time. Peace.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.